Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Well, welcome, everybody. This is Matt Halloran, co-host of the Top Advisor Marketing Podcast, joined today by Kirk Lowe, and we have a very, very special guest. I had the opportunity to speak in front of a group. It's called a cohort group in Detroit about a month ago, and I ran into this woman who was just unbelievably magnificent, just her energy, what she does, how she does it. And the reason why I wanted to bring her on Top Advisor Marketing was because she is actually a marketing and branding genius. And so I'm going to introduce Renee. Renee Walker is a highly regarded speaker on strategy, marketing, and communications. She is the president of Renee Walker and Associates, a full-service strategic communications consultancy. Now, she's been doing this for about 30 years, everybody, so we're really bringing in some serious wisdom to today's podcast. And what we're going to talk about with Renee is her big picture five communication faux pas, missteps, and mistakes, and also some good tips on how to improve your communication, because we all know that marketing is all about communication. So Renee, how you doing?
I'm awesome. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Well, and we are looking forward to your big picture insight here. So one of the things that happened when you and I were hanging out in Detroit is you talked about a word that I don't think financial services professionals pay attention to enough. I know Kirk does a lot of work on the back end of this, but I'd love for you to talk about optics.
Oh, sure. Happy to. So in the brand space and marketing space, we often focus more on the words and sometimes the images, but not the entire design of the communication, which is critically important for not only effective communication, but also resonance, right? So in today's world, everything happens at a nanosecond. And we're just receiving so much information coming in that we don't actually read things anymore. We make a judgment first. And so how you lay out your communications, having white space, having a great design, and being able to put important information and clues that are visually centered so folks will immediately have the eye contact on the visual is really important, because that's part of the process that folks use in order to decide if it's something they want to read. Now, I know I can't be the only person that has every intention of reading all of the stuff that comes at me, and I put it in a pile or I put it in a folder in my inbox or my email. Mm-hmm. And then I have every desire to go back and read it, but I just don't get to it. So you sort of delete them or lop off the bottom half of the pile and start over, right? Mm-hmm. So what you want to do, particularly in the financial space, is make sure that the communications are visually appealing and that they're easy to digest so that people feel like it's a quick read. Even though it's an important read, it's a quick read. If it looks like it's going to require effort or a considerable amount of time, it will get pulled to the side.
And Kirk does this a lot with Tactibrand. So Kirk, I'm going to turn this over to you, because if you look at the white papers specifically in what Renee is talking about there and how you design white papers, it's very, very different than how other financial services branding and marketing companies do that. So would you mind sharing a little bit about what the Tactibrand philosophy is on how to create an engaging white paper?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I don't I love the fact that we're getting some different perspectives here, because I always, you know, I live in my world, right? And Renee lives in hers. And the idea of calling this optics and what to look for, a lot of times I actually just own this for people that we work with. I don't talk a lot about it, but I'm glad you brought it up, Renee. And it is absolutely critical. I mean, I talk a lot about having this, you know, intrigue, like when, you know, it's one of the steps in our framework. And when somebody sees your stuff, they have to be able to relate to the message quickly. But what Renee's saying is the message is the image too. And oftentimes we just take care of that for people, but it's something that you really need to consider. And I think, I do see the other end of this where optics are all that happens. Like I got an email from somebody today, who said, you know, I read your article on 12 website mistakes. Can you go look at our stuff? And optically, this site is off the charts. It's absolutely beautiful, but it's missing some depth. But you have to figure out both. Mm-hmm. And I love the idea that, you know, because optics is what you see, and you process what you see before what you read. I guess that's probably what you're saying. If you can elaborate on that, Renee, that'd be
beautiful. Yeah, please do, Renee. Right.
Happy to. So, and our practice, our framework for creating brand identity or branded communication pieces includes three important components. The first is value, which is what you're speaking to, Kirk. At the end of the day, you want to convey important information that's valuable to the audience you're attempting to connect to. The second piece is you want to make sure that you have not just the value, but you want to make sure that people understand that it's targeted for them, right? So it's going to be something that's going to give them something important. And finally, the visual identity. So, and then the second one of giving them something that resonates with them, that's your voice. Mm-hmm. So we do value, voice, and visual identity. And all of those components have to be together in order to have a great communication piece. The second thing I'll share is a stat that I often refer to. New York University around 2011 did a study, and I just find this very, very interesting. They wanted to sort of take a look at what happens when we as you know, humans sort of see each other for the first time. And what they determined is that in the first 7 seconds of seeing someone, we make 11 major decisions about the individual. Are they approachable? Are they probably trustworthy? I mean, all of these things we do all of the time, but it's in kind of the background of our day and our life in that moment. And so you really want to make sure that when you're putting communications forward, that they are on brand. They're really conveying what it is your brand stands for. They have value. You're using a voice that is going to engage the particular audience or segment of the audience that you're talking with, and that the visuals make sense. And that, so optics comes really from my political background. You know, mm-hmm. we really care about that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, one of the other pieces that I love about this optics conversation is infographics. So I just was working with an advisor in Chicago, and he was working on his website, and because of doing a lot of work with Kirk and doing some more extra research, he needed to stop having so much text. And what he really needed was something that would pull you in, explain something very clearly and distinctly, because your second major point here is one size approach. And we fight this, Renee, all the time. I mean, this is the biggest issue, I believe, in financial services marketing, because we have such an insane compliance overlay that people just throw their hands up in the air and say, well, I'm just going to use what everybody else is using. So, but break down what you mean by one size approach, please.
Sure. So a lot of our clients come up with a marketing piece or a communication piece, and they want to send it to every potential prospect or current customer, whether it's a, you know, recurring newsletter or whatever that piece is. And what we say is you want to take a more strategic approach in that. There should be some piece of each of your communications that is evergreen. It applies to everybody. It's overarching. But at that point, you really want to segment what you're doing. So you want to take a look at, you know, where your customers are and what pain points or opportunities are you helping them to achieve, or you want to be able to help a prospective client achieve. And then financial services, the way I would kind of relay that is this way. When you have a client that is just beginning their career, the strategies that you're going to give them for investment is for the longer term, right? As opposed to someone who's mid-career or toward the end of their career, those investment strategies and recommendations are likely to change. Mm-hmm. Your communication should follow that. Mm-hmm. There should be some general information around what's happening in the sector or what's happening as a whole with the market or whatever in accordance with the rules that and regulations that are established. Mm-hmm. But at that point, you really should segment who your customers are. Put them in buckets and then create opportunities and information that's specific to where they are. What I find often is that we train people to tune us out because we keep throwing things at them that doesn't matter to them. And so eventually they'll just stop. opening or reacting or anything. So you want to make sure that you're being more strategic in that process.
Yeah, Kirk, what do you think?
This is an area of financial planning or financial marketing that the financial industry really struggles with, and they get really nervous about defining a niche for their business. Because the truth is that most of them have so many different clients, Renee, that they really struggle to have the resources in place to provide, to send different information to different people.
I'm so glad you brought that up. So my next point is you should look at frequency.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to send something out, let's say once a month, but do you have to send it out to everybody, or can you segment and send something to each of your targets? And your buckets can be as large as you need them to be. So if you happen to have a group of millennials, those communications need to look and sound and have different level of content than if you have like a mid-career or middle-age type audience. So what I would suggest is maybe instead of trying to hit them with the inbox every single month, you move more to in January, we're going to send to millennials, and in February, we're going to send to the next group. And then in March, we're going to send and rotate it. So they're hearing from you, but when they actually hear from you, it's going to be something that matters. And it's not going to be, oh, I get another monthly or weekly newsletter, or I have another communication. And if something major happens that you really want to communicate to all your audiences because it's general and it affects everybody, or there's a thought leadership opportunity, then just send it to everybody as a special bonus communication.
Mm-hmm. Well, hold on here. So, I mean, you just really even jumped right into your next point, which is making sure that the communication is relevant. But I want to back you up just a little bit, because I know you've been doing this for a long time. And I specifically know with your political background that you might have a little different perspective on the idea of a niche. Okay, so let's talk about that, because our audience cannot hear enough. Because they hear it from Kirk and I a lot. I want them to hear it from another uber professional who's been around, who does this for a living, how important it is to know who you're marketing to and to target that accordingly to the relevance, the niche, and their specific needs.
Sure. So let's see. The best way I think, describe that is you have a great opportunity to have greater impact and more effective communications when you speak to a smaller segment of your overall group than when you try and communicate to everybody the same message. Because the most effective communications actually reach your audience where they are. So you may have some new investors that are just coming into the process that need more information and education and, frankly, handholding. And you might have on the other end of the spectrum organization or individuals who are far more sophisticated. And then you might have a group in the middle that actually probably needs more information and education and a little handholding, but they probably think they're more sophisticated than they really are. It's really, really difficult to have a single message get to all of those particular scenarios and those particular audiences. So it's really important.
You should have like a little button that plays a little ding, 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 like epiphany moment here.
Yes, this is our nugget of gold that we just got from Renee Walker. So say that one more time. And then, Kirk, I want to hear what your perspective is on this, too, please.
Okay, so if you have, again, just my making up the groups, but if you look at your customer base or your client base and you find that you have a lot of new individuals coming into the market that really don't understand the ins and outs, that level of communication is different. They need a little bit more handholding. They need a little bit more information about the nuts and bolts of how the financial services and the resources work. If you have someone who's been investing for a long, long time and they're more sophisticated, then they really don't want to hear the nuts and bolts. They want to hear about what you're thinking is going on with the market and at a more sophisticated level. And then you have the group always in the middle that probably needs more of the first group, but they really think they belong to the third group. So you want to make sure that your communications really meet your clients where they are and you're able to move them through the process. So you're sort of creating a funnel, if you will, a communication mm-hmm. funnel, and you're always sort of helping them move along. So that's how they stay interested.
All right, Kirk, what do you think?
I think the nugget there is really meet your clients where they're at, where they are.
Definitely that advisors need to really think about.
Because if you can't define and be relevant to your audience, it's for starters, you don't know where, how to market as well.
Mm-hmm.
So one is you don't know, as Renee described, the frequency of how often you want to communicate to that audience or what to send them. But it's hard to create value. We've talked about this in a number of podcasts. When you know your audience really well and they're more defined, you can create a lot more value because you can work on the content that you know is going to be appreciated. And a lot of the content that advisors send, like you see it now, Renee, one of the things that happens a lot in industries, advisors don't really like producing content. So mm-hmm. what they do is they buy into a library of content. Let's say it's 1,000 articles. And then they just hit the switch, right? Drip, or they sign up with some social company that provides all kinds of content and just kind of, flows. And the problem is the content is good for pretty much everybody. I mean, there may be some filters there, but I don't think there's many.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sending out content that's not yours, doesn't have your personality.
Mm-hmm.
Might not even be all the stuff that you believe in, to be honest, and not necessarily perfect for your audience. So some may be really basic, some may be more complex. It's all over the map. And I'm glad that this is something that you push and drive too. Is that they if you want to be all these things that we've talked about, first thing is you got to figure out who your audience is and what they care about, and how do you deliver value to them.
I really wanted to have Renee on the podcast, Kirk, so that people realize that we're not insane, that other smart people actually agree with stuff. Now, I want to jump in here, too, because my old company, one of the big things that we used to sell was 100 touches per client every year. But what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it's not about heft. It's not about the touches. It's about the quality and the focused message of those touches. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. It's always about quality over quantity. So just from a strict brand perspective, financial advisors are asking individuals to trust them with their future. And you're trying to create a brand that says that not only am I trustworthy and invested in you, I'm probably trying to say I'm a high value, high touch experience, meaning that you're not just a number. I'm just not trying to collect clients, that I'm going to actually care about what you care about and help you achieve your goals. That's a heavy lift.
Mm-hmm.
If your communication say, I just, picked this up out of a library and it's not relevant, that's not congruent with what you're saying from a brand perspective. And so you're really doing yourself a disservice and creating obstacles that are unnecessary. So you really want, if you're asking people to invest with you for their future and to trust you, you should want to give them quality content that's from your voice and that is relevant to what they need in order to feel not only safe, but invested in the process.
Hmm.
So that's part of the retention too, right?
Well, right. And it also really does tee up an easier opportunity for them to refer, and that's really this last of the five communication faux pas that you've talked about is prospective client engagement. If you're just blasting out of stuff and it's really interesting how you're saying this, because it's really reinforcing that the stuff that personally I've been doing, I haven't been in the marketing and branding field as long as either of you, really. It's really since I've been learning from Kirk, and it's just so nice to have this other perspective. I was working with a client and he sent me his weekly market commentary, and it's exactly what that says, weekly market commentary. But then he gets really upset because all his clients want to do is to talk about the markets. And I'm like, you're reinforcing this behavior every single solitary week by, it's almost like sports scores, right? Well, the S&P did this, and the FTSE did this, and the Dow did this, and this is what we're looking at, and here's the beta, alpha, gamma, spectacular words that I really don't care about. And you know what? Your clients don't either. But what they really do care about is, if you want to get in front of the type of communication and the messaging and the way that your clients are going to communicate with you, you have to look at what's going out. If everything that you have going out is market-related, related information, don't be pissed off that they're going to want to talk about what stocks that you've chosen instead of talking about long-term planning, goals, and dreams.
Absolutely. Renee, I got a question for you, Renee.
Yes.
Would a politician who doesn't want to talk about a certain subject consistently bring that subject up?
Absolutely not.
Oh, what a great question.
Absolutely not.
And so you've worked, just so everybody knows, one of the, after I got done speaking and Renee and I, and a bunch of people went out and had some food and some drinks, her political background. And when you go to her website, which is incitium.com, which we're going to make sure there's links and everything here, you're going to really get to see, you know, the unbelievable pedigree of this wonderful person that we have on today. And Kirk, that's brilliant. What a great way to say this. If you, a politician, and in fact, they dodge those questions, right? I mean, they're going to, you know, and I know Renee and I talked about this a little bit, but she actually even teaches them how to talk around it so that they don't have to answer that specific question, so that they, not to dodge it, but to stay on message. Most of our advisors do such a terrible job of staying on message. So me staying on message, let's talk about prospective client engagement. So that's the last of the five communication faux pas, missteps and mistakes. Take it away, Renee.
So I'm going to start with an experience that I've unfortunately had several times with financial advisors who are interested in talking to me as a prospective client. So this has happened over lunch. It happened last night at an event. And so what happens is immediately everybody offers, hey, let me take a look at what you're doing. I know that I can make it better for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a non-starter,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't know me. I don't know you. You're asking me to give you my financial information. You haven't established trust or credibility or even any semblance of a relationship with me. So I'm not just going to hand over my very sensitive information. The other thing, though, is if you're talking to a prospective client or someone who really doesn't feel comfortable understanding the financial markets and stock markets and the Dow Jones and whatnot, that you're really sort of creating a lot of additional angst for them because this is an area that they already feel uncomfortable about. And now you're also asking them to be extraordinarily personal and just hand over their documents. Mm-hmm. So anytime, and it doesn't really matter if it's financial advisors or any other industry, anytime I see communications that say, we know we can do it better for you, you don't know that. Mm-hmm. So that's a non-starter. It really puts a really bad taste in folks' mouth. And I see that happen all the time with financial advisors.
Well, and Kirk and I talk about this a lot. It's like trying to ask somebody to marry them before you've ever gone out on a first date.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Unfortunately, there's a real, I'm going to say arrogance. Probably some people would be mad when I say that, but I think it's the truth. So, you know, so be it. But I think there's an arrogance in this industry that you can dive into what is accepted because the profession all tells you that you need to get some kind of commitment from people. And a lot of people would suggest, look, I don't even know what I can do for you unless I understand the numbers. But I agree that there's got to be a better way. I mean, one of the big parts of branding is to try to build that relationship and that trust by proving your brand and your marketing so that when you get to the place where you say, hey, you know, if you really want me to help you, I need to look at your financials. And there's way more trust built because branding builds trust a lot sooner in a relationship. But having said that, you know, it's still a pretty tough thing to ask for that early in a relationship.
Absolutely. And you hit on something really important, Kirk, which is often in our practice, and we currently operate in like 8 different sectors, right? But often our clients struggle with how to differentiate themselves in the marketplace, what's unique about them. And what we always say is show up and give the personal touch and go in for the long game, not the short win.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there are some people who really are maybe frustrated or are really, you know, looking to leave or looking to get started. And that's a different conversation. But for most of us, we have been involved with some financial services person for some time. And so you really want to look at more of a funnel approach and you want to make sure that you're moving them through the funnel at an appropriate pace, which is why I go back to the communications are really important. So if you only really try and do the hard sell at hello, I have no interest or desire because I feel like I'm a commodity at that point. I don't feel like you're going, I'm just one of many, right? So I don't know that the experience is ever going to get better, and I'm not interested in really giving you an opportunity. So what we try and make sure our clients understand is you have to recognize what your brand is and what your brand promises, and all of your touch points, every single one of them, has to reinforce that message. And the more successful you are at doing that, the easier your sales are. So my company, we celebrate 5 years in a couple of months. And until recently, we haven't done any marketing. All of our contracts and all of our opportunities have come from basically people saying, you need to talk to Renee, or you need to talk to Renee and her team, or whatever not. And so I get a lot of already warm leads, because a lot of the conversation has already taken place on my behalf. And once they go to my website to check me out, because everybody does that these days before they have a conversation or send the email, it reinforces what we say we stand for and the experience we give to our clients.
And you need to check the, I'm sorry, go ahead, Kirk.
Yeah, one of the interesting things I thought you just mentioned there, Renee, was that and I think that one of the characteristics of branding at its core is that it's a long game. And I think so many people are focused on the short game. And when you can really change that mindset and go long term, you've got a great opportunity to build a brand and to be something special, and then create that environment, that marketing environment, that culture, that brand that that Renee's talking about, where you're never really selling. You're just answering questions and getting the show going, because people already trust you. They already know you're the expert. You know, Renee, I bet people don't call you and say, hey, Renee, you know, what's your philosophy on branding? Or can you show me a whole bunch of they call you. They already know, you're the person, right? You're the guru. And, how can you help me?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The conversations we have are about fit and about the opportunity to make sure that they are successful, because we're in, invested in their success. So you're absolutely right. I rarely get a question about, well, have you ever done this for so-and-so or this sector or whatever? Most of the time it's, hey, this is my problem, or this is what we're trying to struggle with, or this is our opportunity. And we really feel like our brand doesn't help us be successful. Can you help us? And we're happy to do that. I think the other thing I'll say, because your particular audience is very invested in metrics and numbers, so understanding where you are and benchmarking some things is important. I always kind of talk about Apple as a brand. Interbrand and their most recent 100 top global brands or best global brands in October of last year, Apple's brand is now valued at $178 million globally. So what that means is brands have value. And if you're not investing in yours, then you're missing an opportunity. And frankly, you're leaving money on the table. The second piece is your brand is really the thing that causes you to differentiate yourself, your services in the marketplace. And it's really what drives the attraction in the beginning of the funnel.
Renee, you also, on this handout that people can get on your website, and we're going to talk about that in just a second, you also have 6 things to help people improve their communications. So in closing here, if you wouldn't mind going over those 6, and then let's talk about how people can get in touch with you and what people can do to engage you if they'd like.
Oh, I'd be happy to. Thank you so much. So to improve your communications, the first thing you want to do is analyze what you're currently doing for your current and prospective clients. You want to look at the demographics. You want to look at the goals and the strategies you're currently using. And that goes back to what I talked about in terms of segmentation, right? Who really is your audience? What is your client base? What do they care about? Those are the beginning foundation for moving forward. Then secondly, as you develop your client segments, you want to identify potential content topics. So are they preparing, or are they saving, or are they trying to purchase their first home? Are they looking to retire? Are they millennials or the younger generation and they're just coming into the market? So when you have your segments, it's much easier for you to be able to develop content ideas. And the other thing I'll tell you from my PR background, the media is pretty predictable in terms of what they're going to do every year. So in the first quarter, they're always talking about forecasts. They're always talking about, what are they called? At New Year's, the resolutions, right? So the top two resolutions every year for almost everybody is make more money or lose weight, and they just flip. So you can always know that in January and whatnot, you have an opportunity to kind of talk about the year ahead and those types of things. Toward the beginning of the second quarter, people are talking about graduation and what that means and job market and whatnot. And so each quarter, the media really sort of tells you what they're going to talk about. It doesn't change much. So you could follow that as an example as well, because everything economically is tied to something that's going on in the media if you're stumped for ideas. Thirdly, work with a graphic designer. This is really important. Even if you only engage the graphic designer in order to create a template for you that actually reflects your brand. And again, when I'm talking about brand, I mean the value that you're providing, the voice, as well as the visual identity. Fourth, you want to create a communication schedule. So again, looking at your segments and looking at how frequently you feel you need to communicate. And the best way to know that is to ask people that you are trying to communicate to, how often and what are they interested in and what they care about. So that's a great way to do that. And then always remember to include some general content that we call evergreen. And I'll make the suggestion a second time. If you have three segments of customers or clients, then rotate them, send something to each of those segments once a month, and then also include the same like evergreen content. Fourth, you want to announce that you have a new communication strategy and a new communication plan so that you can reset your audience. So if they have been accustomed to receiving a communication from you routinely that doesn't speak to them, you're asking them to take another look and give you another opportunity. And then finally, you always want to review your metrics and modify your content, the design, and the frequency of your communication so you can always continuously improve.
Fantastic. Now, the website, insightm.com, right? You want to spell that for everybody?
Sure. It's ENSIGHTIUM.com.
Fantastic. Now, you have something for our audience, don't you?
I do. So I'm just super excited to have had the opportunity to speak with you guys today. So anyone who's interested in the book I wrote, Brand Power for Small Business Entrepreneurs, which is a guide that helps you understand how to build your brand, no matter your industry and no matter whether you have paid attention to your brand or not, because everyone has a brand, whether you are managing it or leveraging it or not. That's available. I'm going to give away 50 complimentary copies. So you just go to insightm.com/top-advisor and you can give me your information and we'll get that book out to you. You can also download the cheat sheet there that we've been talking about today as well.
Fantastic. Kirk, you have anything in closing?
I was hoping you could repeat that address again. We'll add it to the summary as well, but it'd be good for just people who are just listening to hear that again.
Sure. It's Insightium, ENSIGHTIUM.com/top-advisor.
Beautiful. Fantastic. Thanks so much, Renee. It was lovely having you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I would love to circle back around, if you don't mind. We'd love to get you back on the podcast in a few months and talk about phone calls that you might have had with financial advisors and some of the things that you have noticed working in this segment, because I'm hoping this throws you a little bit of business. Because everybody, you know, when you have the opportunity to get an outside perspective, even if it's just for Renee to do, you know, just an overall assessment to really see where you're at. But there were some really powerful points today. You know, making sure that every piece of your brand communication is in line with your brand. Make sure you're communicating the right message to the right people in the right demographic at the right time. Making sure that it's not just a cookie cutter approach, that you are tailoring your communications, which, by the way, isn't as difficult as you might think. It's one of the reasons why Kirk and I do podcasts. Wait a second, Renee, you have a podcast too. Can you tell everybody about that?
Sure. The podcast is Insightium. podcast, and it's available at InsideTM.com.
Fantastic. So Renee knows the power of podcasting. And when you want to come up with ideas, having a second set of eyes, having another person, a host, somebody who can walk you through some good questions and pull out the information instead of you having to organically create it, that's really what Advisor Content X is for, and one of the reasons why Kirk and I are here. So for Kirk Lowe and for Renee Walker, this is Matt Halloran from Top Advisor Marketing Podcasts.